Is this on?
It's on.
Okay. We've heard you fans loud and clear. We've turned up the volume a bit, moved a little closer to the mic for this week's episode after our experiment last time podcasting in mime. Sorry about that, John. Apparently, actually being able to hear a podcast is an important feature. And what better episode to be able to hear than our conversation today with singer, songwriter, lawyer, father, Brian Westren of the band Westren and Maori. Brian is going to talk music, marketing a band, releasing a record, and singing for Billy Joel. Also, brackets, Bucknell, and cheeseburgers. Just the meat, the cheese, and the bun. You're listening to the Cold Oatmeal Podcast.
Welcome to Cold Oatmeal, a podcast by the Rush Strategies team about PR and public affairs. Really.
I was distracted staring at Joe's cold oatmeal.
Yeah, well, it's here.
He's got it on his
desk. It's always right here. Now. It's always here.
And by the way, the ratio of like fruit to disgusting, like 1 to 10, it's got some disgusting stuff in some fruit. Yeah,
there's nothing disgusting.
One part fruit.
What in there is disgusting?
I don't even know what's in it, but it looks like cucumber mash and maybe a couple of chopped apples.
Did you have Burger King for breakfast? What was your...
Say that!
Okay, welcome back to the Cold Oatmeal Podcast. This is Matt Resch, owner of Resch Strategies. You can find us at reschstrategies.com. We are a public relations and public affairs firm based in beautiful downtown Lansing, Michigan. Joined in the studio with my colleagues.
Stephanie Vancouvering.
Joe Besci.
And Nick DeLue.
We also have a very special guest with us today who has not been a guest on the podcast before, but has contributed a great deal to what we've put together so far. That's Brian Westren. And so we're going to talk to Brian here in a minute. But before we do that, this is episode number 11. The first 10, actually, I should say, the first 9 were flawless. I mean, it was amazing.
Well, there was the one where I was out sick, so you got to take that one out.
That was even more flawless than
the
other
ones. Of course. Walked into that.
But yeah, I mean, it's astounding for 4 people who have never done this before to do it perfectly 9 times. But the 10th time came around last week, unfortunately, and I'm just going to do a public apology to our faithful listeners that our great guest, who offered a lot of very interesting comments and stories and interesting feedback, John Ruhring from MERS, didn't like to be too close to the microphone, unfortunately. And so it's kind of a blessing and a curse that I heard from a lot of people who said that they loved the podcast, but they couldn't hear John. So one, I'm grateful that people are listening. Two, wish John would have talked a little more directly into the microphone. But we have given Joe permission now to, if you hear a thud and a yell and a scream,
I will scold whoever needs to be scolded.
We will make sure that our guests are speaking directly into the microphone so that we can hear it, and we might have to have John back just to rerun it all down in the future. So
that would be fun.
Yeah, he was good. I was really bummed because he had some good answers and some good stories.
Yeah.
It's just the technology gets in the way sometimes. But so, Brian Westren, Westren Maori, westernmaori.com.
Yeah.
Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having.
So I think for people who have listened to the podcast from the beginning, I don't remember which episode it was, but we talked a little bit about how frustrating it was as we were putting this together to identify music for this thing, because obviously there are legal rights and, you know, those pesky laws and permissions that you have to get. And so we couldn't find anything that was decent. And so
hello, I played the piano for you.
As I said, we couldn't find anything decent.
I'm not bitter about losing my audition, by the way.
But I remembered, obviously, I've known Brian for a long time, going back to our days working together in Governor Engler's office, that he was a musician and a really very good one at that, and so asked him if we could use some of his stuff, and he very graciously said, sure. And it's been a really great part of the podcast. I appreciate it. So
thank you very much.
So you can hear him, westernandmaori.com. You can find the music at iTunes and at Spotify. And so we're going to talk a little bit to Brian today about starting a band, running a band, marketing his band, the future, what he has in store. So thanks for stopping by.
Absolutely. Appreciate it.
I came across in a review. You have a new single out, and I found this review. It said, Western and Maori are a Michigan-based duo who have been making music within the Americana folk genre since 2003. If you take a listen to their SoundCloud page, you can find a bunch of extraordinary songs from the past year that carry their own charm and sophistication, but all have one thing in common. It's Western and Maori know how to create affecting melodies, whether it's rootsy songs to dance to or thought-provoking, melancholic songs to be sad to. So what's it like to get a Google alert in the morning with your name in it and have that written about you?
It's interesting in as much as I think my wife would read that and she would say, songs to dance to. I don't know if that's how I'd characterize that music, but no, it's extremely humbling. Peter and I have started a new project this past year, which we're really enthusiastic about because we've sort of taken the constraints of in the past where we would create an entire record. And in creating an entire record, you come up with 8 to 12 songs, and then you release it to the world all in one fell swoop. And then ultimately, depending on how aggressive you are with the promotion and touring, which we don't do, quite frankly, it goes away in 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've decided to do is we have upwards of 17 songs that we're currently sitting on, and we're producing one a month. So we produce one song a month, and we started at the end of January, and we've released two so far, and our March release actually comes out in April. But we're kind of trying to promote it organically, where people kind of discover us and they can listen to the individual song as opposed to having to digest an entire album.
So how much of that is a symptom of the changing way technology has changed how you release music and producing an album, and people don't have CDs anymore? I mean,
yeah.
Is it a personal schedule change because of, you both have wife and kids and the restraints of that?
I think it's a little bit of everything. The biggest driver for us, I think, is the ability to, balance our home life and our work life and also our passion for music, to be able to say, okay, this is a song that I'm feeling really good about. Because Pete and I have a partnership where I'll write the song, I'll write the basic essence of the song, the melody and the lyrics, but I don't know much beyond that. I mean, I can't play every instrument like mm-hmm. Pete can. And so our partnership as songwriting partners is that he takes that essence and then he spends it. So it's important for both of us to feel strongly about a specific song. And that's kind of how we've taken this new project on, is each song that we both feel really strongly about, we really make sure that we spend an entire month or more, if it takes that, to make sure it gets to where we want it to be.
How much do you guys play off each other? And you mentioned that you're the writer of the song, and he's the, the more...
Yeah. I'd call him obviously he's a songwriter, but mm-hmm. he's also a producer.
Okay.
And a recording engineer. I think of the almost 16 years that we've been making music, it's incredible to think about how reliant we were on the going into a studio, the bringing all the musicians together. And that's awesome, and that's a great experience to go through. But at the same time, Pete's sort of got all that
right
in his own home studio now.
So how many times do you happen to go into his area and he comes into yours? Like, you write the song, you give it to him, mm-hmm. he comes back with, man, why don't you change this, or what about this, and vice versa? Does that happen much, or do you stay in your own lanes?
Yeah, I think we've evolved to a point where we have a really good rapport. I mean, I think in years past, when you're in a band and you're trying to carve out your own role, there is that stay in your own lanes mentality. But I think now, where we're basically dedicated to each individual song each month, really it's anything goes. I mean, a perfect example is the second single that we just released, Getting Pretty Good at Getting Bad News, is a song that, if you heard the acoustic demo, it sounds just like, sort of the Americana folky vibe that we've had on albums past. But he took it in a direction that was wholly unique, but still kept the heart and soul of the song, in my opinion. So,
where was the first place you ever performed publicly?
Ah, well, the first the the story we tell is that I met Pete while I was on a study break at I was at the law school at Michigan State University, and he was at Holmes Hall. So I wandered down there because I heard there was an open mic, and yeah, I should have been studying for my law school exams, but I've needed a break, and I went down there, and Pete wasn't actually playing, but I played a couple songs, and he came up to me and just sort of started talking to me. He was reading a book, and so that was sort of our first public interaction. But I had no idea how gifted he was as a guitarist or a multi-instrumentalist at that time until we started to hang out after that. And in subsequent meetings, we started to play music. And then he had a mutual friend that had a contact at Harper's, and that's where we started to play every Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. I think it's the first place I ever heard,
heard
you.
Yeah, every Wednesday and almost every Friday or Saturday on the patio. So
Britney Spears covers.
I think musicians will say that their experience covering songs really helps you kind of get into that songwriting mode, because you learn the various, you know, strong structures that are popular, but then you also figure out, you know, what you like and what you don't like.
What's the favorite song? What's your favorite cover that you do?
Gosh, favorite cover that we do that I always look forward to is probably Maybe I'm Amazed by Paul McCartney.
That's not a Britney Spears song. What's your favorite Britney Spears cover?
My favorite Britney Spears song that we cover, we do Baby Hit Me One More Time. Is that, or Hit Me One More Time? Can you say it? I don't know.
She can get it, but I can't.
Yeah. So that was one. I believe we also rolled out Toxic at one point.
There you go.
I think it was Baby Hit Me One More Time that I heard the first time that I was sitting out at Harper's. I'm like, what the hell is he doing?
They do? Yeah. Have you no shame?
That's a good song.
Yeah. It is a good song. It's even better when Brian and Pete do it.
I expect to see the dance moves. So you mentioned writing music. We were having a conversation here yesterday about how you even do that. I mean, many of us in the room have had musical training and done a lot over the years, but if you asked any of us to come up with a melody, come up with anything, we'd be dry. What inspires you? How do you do that?
It's interesting because I often think that it's a little bit more difficult to write songs the more advanced you are musically. And I think it's important to be able to strip it down to, you know, a guy or a girl who can play acoustic guitar and only knows six chords, because you're left with a universe of possibility there that kind of serves the song, and you're not going off in different directions, noodling, and I think you can focus more that way. And that's really, you know, some of my favorite songwriters come from the Americana and country genre, and those are artists that are famous for constructing a song with three chords. I mean, the Hank Williamses of the world and Guy Clark's of the world and Lyle Lovett, even, you know, the very, very skilled players, but they don't utilize a lot of ingredients in their songwriting. And that's a big part of it for me, is trying to make sure that while you might be trying to broaden horizons with certain conventions of songs, you don't necessarily have to learn a new diminished chord to throw in there just for kicks. Yeah.
Do you have music going in your head all the time?
Yeah, always. Especially the way that I see, you know, my growing family interact. You know, it's especially how much Lucy and Piper, our daughters, really enjoy music. It's kind of fun to look at you know, what gets them going and sort of reflect on that, because, you know, you kind of do look through different prisms when you're creating. And lyrics, I have been accused by a few of not being able to write the true happy, you know. Geraldine Lasher's sister Anne Marie, who's a friend of mine, is always getting on me about writing a pop song, and quite frankly, I feel like I have, but but not in the eyes of, right, of everybody. So yeah, I do think drawing on those influences, to get back to you, is important. I mean, drawing on influences and experiences is as important as anything.
Does that prompt tough conversations at home? You're not writing happy songs. You've got some lyrics that are tough. It's a sad song. And Well, honey, I'd like to talk to you about this real quick.
Let's and I think Lindsay's, my wife, is very very funny about it, because she's like, she'll ask, but sometimes she'll just say, yeah, you know, sometimes, like in conversation with other people, sometimes I wonder what those songs are about. But but I always try to provide the disclaimer, because I do like to write a lot about characters that aren't me. Those are way more interesting than me, to be honest with you. So, and that's, you know, whether they're from literature or whether they're from, you know, an observation out in our world, those are always interesting subject matters. But then there are also very specific instances and songs that, that I, you know, When You Arrive on, the Past Rushes In record that Peter and I put out is a song that very much was written on our back step at our first house together while Lindsay, we were waiting for, you know, labor. And it was literally waiting for Lucy to come into this world. So it's, instances like that where you can say, yes, they're hugely personal, but then others where you kind of have to say, no, that's not really a reflection of me. Yeah.
So what comes first, the music or the lyrics?
I would say more the music, because oftentimes I'll have a song idea that I'll be working with, and I'll just, whether it's babble lyrics or whether I'll have a certain phrases that I like, but then the rest of it might just be, you know, babble or dum-dum wording that fits in the melody. So probably the music starts first, and that's really helpful for Pete, because that's a language he speaks really well. So he can say, okay, here's the structure, and then he can take it in a direction where he makes the dynamics work and he makes the transitions work really well. And, you know, I could have a working demo that I have most of the song written, and ultimately we could go in to record final vocals and the lyrics might have changed tremendously, but he'll have structured it around the music. So
talk about the process of marketing yourself and releasing. I mean, you talked about this new approach with these new songs that you're putting out. Mm-hmm. And how it's different from when you did an album. But what do you guys do? And, you know, walk us through the steps you take to try to get your music out there. Do you know, put out a press release? Do you send it out? Do you have a list of people you send stuff to? Or
in the days past, when there were CDs and when there were, you know, A&R people, mm-hmm. that would actually have to work with a publicist and try and get your songs out there. But now there are a lot of third parties that actually specialize in getting songs to ears, and whether or not, you know, it's wholly effective. We're actually kind of in our infancy of trying to explore it, because we do use a couple of different third party vendors to try and get songs to either, you know, pretty well-known and well-respected music writers, whether they're bloggers or, you know, run magazines or freelance in that way. But also the biggest issue now, and it's a complicated one because of the controversy over streaming royalties and how little songwriters do get paid, is to make sure that, you know, Spotify and Apple Music and things of that nature, there are ways to approach curators of playlists, and, you know, some of them are kind of analogous to the A&R days and the song pickers, where they do kind of, they can put you on a playlist that can influence very much the number of people who get exposed to you. So that's important to us. We're trying to, with this project currently, trying to work in that world. But, you know, Peter and I had an amazing experience 4 years ago now, where we were selected by the National Music Publishers Association to perform in New York City in front of Billy Joel. And,
oh my gosh.
And actually Leanne Rimes as well. She was also featured in the gist of that was that this is a group of people who kind of like Saturday Night Live audition, where you're not like Lorne Michaels tells everybody that you can't laugh. Like this is like the stoic of the stoic. Like the audience is not really there to make you feel good. Or they're kind of holding their cards close to the vest about whether they like your music and they want to talk to you afterwards. So we performed two songs for them and, you know, kind of came out of it with a lot of really good contacts and a lot of really good feedback, but it was very nerve wracking.
So you're in an auditorium full of, mm-hmm. almost like an audition, like people are just sitting there listening and taking notes, but they're not a engaged audience in the music.
Not in such a way where, you feel like you're connecting with them. It was amazing. It was an amazing opportunity to be selected. And we have a really good relationship with that organization, but it was every bit as scary to be on that stage than, you know, performing or, you know, in a large venue where people are gonna, you know, throw tomatoes at you, something like that. They were kind though afterwards, but it led to a lot of opportunities and relationships that we're trying to explore even still today, you know, in terms of getting those songs to the right set of ears.
So this may be a dumb question, but I honestly have no idea. How do you get your music on Pandora? Are you on Pandora? Are you on Apple Music? That kind of stuff. Those kinds of services.
Yeah. So Apple Music and Spotify, Amazon, we're on those platforms. Pandora is interesting because I don't use Pandora. Sorry, Pandora. But
they're not a sponsor.
They heard. They definitely heard.
But I understand that your music is submitted and it's accepted, and then they create playlists based on your song. So it's like a radio.
So you submit. Can they accept you or reject you?
Yeah, I think there is that process, and I think just the third party vendors you can work through to get your songs placed is, it's not a difficult task to do, but there are platforms that we prefer. I think Apple Music, Amazon, and Spotify are the three we favor just as user friendly options. Mm-hmm. So,
is there an artist? Let me see if I can phrase this right. Is there an artist whose playlist you pop up on as being liked that you think is super cool?
One of the things with the last single that we released that generated our first official Spotify playlist. We were on something called Fresh Acoustic. I can't remember the name of it, but it was an actual Spotify curated playlist, as opposed to Brian or Matt just starting a playlist and saying, "Hey, come visit our playlist." So that one in and of itself was interesting because it featured a lot of indie artists that we you may not be aware, but Freedom Fry, they're actually a husband and wife, but the husband is from originally Hudsonville, and they live out in Los Angeles now. So we've been kind of tracking their career, and it was kind of cool to have, you know, a couple of Michigan artists appear on the same.
Do you get any kind of analytic data from those, so you know how many times your song's played and that kind of thing?
Yeah, apparently we're really big in Vancouver. We're really big in Toronto. And really big in Paris.
Well, this review I read was from a website in London.
Right, yeah. So you can kind of see where the streaming's occurring after the fact. And
Maybe you need to plan a foreign tour.
A European tour, right.
Get on the road.
That would be amazing. And I know my family would actually be all for it because the travel bug is among us. But one of the cool things, just last month, we received a message from out of the blue from a woman in Paris who I actually remember interacting with her 15 years ago when she bought our first record, One Week Epiphany, off of our CD Baby site or something like that. And she wrote a really nice note about her and her, you know, at that time, whether high school or college aged, learning all the words to a song of ours called Saturday, and just now really excited that we were still making music years after. And she just realized it. I mean, she hadn't kind of been with us the whole time, so it is kind of a I don't know if we would be able to afford a European tour, but we could certainly call it that and just go on a trip.
You just ask Billy Joel.
Exactly.
Open for him.
Who do you listen to when you go to listen to the radio?
There's a lot of I try to stay up on new bands as best I can, but I still fall back into a lot of people I just grew up on. Like I mentioned, Lyle Lovett. I love listening to Lyle Lovett. I love a lot of artists that have a retro sound to them, like Richard Hawley, who's a British songwriter, Ron Sexsmith, who's a Canadian songwriter. Boxer Rebellion's a modern indie band that I really like. It's kind of interesting. I was thinking about who's on my playlists these days, and it can be anything from the old 97s to, you know, something that's really avant-garde. So
are you at a point at this kind of, I mean, we're the same age, I think, pretty much. Are you at a point now where you do get frustrated at not at kind of having to kind of break into this, you know, this gigantic music scene, and or is it at a point now where it's fun, you're yeah. you kind of figured out the right formula and you're having a good time, or is are you still want to go
yeah no I think the formula, the place both Peter and I are at in our lives right now, we like this dynamic a lot. Years past, it was very much that way. We would tour, you know, before we had kids, we would tour all over the country, and we would play regularly down in Atlanta and Nashville and, you know, other areas. And it would be a competitive thing where we just couldn't quite figure out how to break it. But now I do think that if you can make music at your own pace, if you can make music that you're proud of, and really from our perspectives with, he's got a son and a daughter, and, I've got two daughters, and just the idea that they would, you know, maybe in 10 years look back and revisit some of these songs and say, these are pretty cool. So that's actually kind of more of the legacy we're interested in, I think, at this point, to be cool in the eyes of our children.
We'll enjoy it while it lasts.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fleeting.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you stopping by.
Yeah, no,
and
thank
I appreciate
you very much.
I can't thank you enough for letting us use some of the music on yeah. on the album, both in the stuff that you sang with your daughters at Christmas
yeah.
time. How did the Christmas album turn out though for
it,
the grandparents?
It turned out well. I will say it was more of an EP, getting the kids to sit down and focus on. You know, you have to be careful with songs that have a lot of lyrics, but I will say that their version of Silver and Gold is top notch.
So. Maybe we can play that next Christmas.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Broncos.
I saw an interesting topic, but it would probably turn out badly, like our movie quote thing.
Okay.
It was on Twitter.
The movie quote didn't turn out poorly. We were just doing it over text.
Yeah. So there were actually two I saw on Twitter. One was a hashtag, ruin my day in 5 words, which was really funny. People were posting things like, you know, Donald Trump is still president, things like that. But then the other one that I saw yesterday was somebody had posed the question, a misunderstanding that you had as a child that took you some time to figure out. And some of the common ones were things like, thinking that when somebody got fired at work, dad came home talking about somebody getting fired at work, and this woman was incredibly stressed out because, you know, you torched somebody today and, you know, and you're just coming home now and everything's fine. And it made me think of mine when I was a kid. All the commercials on TV, I used to think that they were all brought to you. They were brought to you by.
Brought to?
Brought, and I couldn't understand the brought to you. But there were things like that. That were.
How did you survive that?
Well, that was not. That was.
That sounds very traumatic.
It was. Well, it took me. I didn't. What was traumatic about it was that I didn't know it wasn't brought to you until I was like 13, because I wasn't talking and nobody was talking to me about it. So I think we were eventually making up fake commercials at school or something. And I said, this was brought to you by.
If I had one, I'd think about something that happens to my kids now. When I realized that TV didn't wait for me, I thought that I just got home. You know, I got home from school every day. Uh-huh. And my favorite show was Emergency.
Oh, yeah.
Although I called it Roy and John. And so I would come home and watch Roy and John, wear my fire hat. And, you know, there was one day that we were late or something. I got home and Roy and John wasn't on. And Mom's like, well, yeah, it's on at 3 o'clock and we got home at 4 o'clock. I'm like, no, the TV waits for me. And the shows come on when I turn them on. Which is what Cooper thinks now, because everything's on demand. And so when there's mm-hmm. something that's not on demand, he can't comprehend why there is a commercial, why he can't fast forward over the commercial, and that there might be something on at a specific time.
Yeah.
So I don't know that I could think of one for myself, but one pops right to mind from a family member. And it's a much more minor thing, but in keeping with music. So my aunt Janet, who I'm sure doesn't listen to this podcast, is a beautiful organist. I mean, she plays organ beautifully. She's beautiful too, but you get what I'm saying. And so she has played the organ and the piano for her church and then eventually my church. And so there's a famous hymn, at least in Baptist circles. I think it's All Hail the Power of Jesus' Name. I don't know if you're familiar with that. And there's a lyric in there that goes, it's like, let every knee prostrate fall on this terrestrial ball. On this terrestrial ball, on this terrestrial ball. And I remember sitting in the pew with her once, not too long ago, and she's in her 70s, and she turns to me and she goes, oh, wait a minute, is that Earth? I said, yes, Aunt Janet, that's Earth. And she goes, my entire life I thought that we were talking about some fancy dance.
Yes, I'm going to the terrestrial ball.
Head into the terrestrial ball.
So let's do some bracketology.
Go green.
Go Bucknell. Bisons.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Bisons bandwagon. Starts here.
So we've got the brackets on the wall here, obviously. We've got between us and your son, Owen, and then Deb, we've got six of them on the wall. And I think three or four of you have picked Bucknell to upset Michigan State in the first round.
I think there's just me and Stephanie. I don't know who else is doing that.
Matt, didn't you pick?
I want them to win, but I didn't actually pick them.
So there's two of the six. I feel like that's a disproportionately large number of people picking Bucknell, comparatively.
We'll see what happens. I'm feeling good.
Joe went to Bucknell for a little while.
That shocked me. I honestly didn't know that until somebody texted about that. I thought you were a Notre Dame guy the whole way.
That was one of your childhood misremembrances that you just discovered. What? Joe went to Bucknell? I thought Joe went to Bucknell. Notre Dame. He didn't go to Bucknell. He's even snobbier than I thought. Yeah.
Was it a childhood dream to go to Bucknell?
No, it was a childhood dream to go to Notre Dame. Okay. And then I blew it. And I had to go slum it at Bucknell for a little bit.
I also picked it because of the movie that Dyke and I are currently very well relating to with Will Ferrell and Amy Poehler, where they're trying to send their daughter to Bucknell and they can't afford it. So they operate a casino out of their house. So...
I did watch that. You're right. It sort of sucked.
It wasn't
very good.
But
I'm sick of Will Ferrell doing garbage movies. He's funnier than that.
Yep.
Well, you know, Owen, there was last weekend. Was the opening weekend of Major League Soccer, and Will Ferrell is a part owner of one of the Los Angeles soccer teams.
Well, that makes sense.
And he was on the set. The ESPN guys were interviewing him before the debut game of this soccer club. And Owen's watching it, and he goes, you got to get Will Ferrell on Cold Oatmeal. He would be awesome.
Have you reached out to the publicist yet?
I have not. We should do that. Mm-hmm. Owen also said, as he was filling out his brackets, that he got done, and he was going to do two, and he was trying to decide which one he was going to enter into the office pool. And he got done with the one. He goes, "This, can I do this one again?" I'm like, "I don't care. You can do as many as you want. Just pick one." He goes, "Because I've got Murray State going to the Final Four, and they're just not very good." I'm like, "Well, you wrote them down four times. I know. I don't know why, but
well, sometimes you Murray look at those State. Matchups and just talk yourself into something.
The pathway for Murray State."
Yeah. I think Owen's got a real coward's bracket on the wall, man. There's like no upsets in that first round. 10-7 is about as wild as it gets.
Well, it's interesting if you look at our winners. So Deb and I are going to win this pool because we both picked Michigan State to win it all. then two of you have picked North Carolina, and two of you have picked Villanova. So,
well, when you win and you pick Jimmy John's as the place that we go for a sad lunch,
you'll all enjoy it. Yeah, but the good news is whoever's buying will have to buy. We can buy you whatever you want. You don't have to eat a slim one and a bag of chips like I do every week.
So I had this. I went. Owen likes gets a slim. What's the slim that has a salami and that's some four, some five?
You wouldn't know.
You've only ever had slim one.
Yeah.
So for our faithful listeners, you would know that you might know or you might not know. Nick has a slim one from Jimmy John's every day of the week.
Well, like 3 days a week.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I ordered a slim. Five, I think, for Owen. And I asked for lettuce. And the guy yelled at me. He's like, "You can't have lettuce on a slim." I'm like, "Why not?
You got to make it a turkey."
Goes, "That's why it's slim."
Right.
Like, who knew?
So what is that just what makes a slim?
It's
a slim?
Just meat.
That's
and cheese.
That's gross.
And cheese.
Well,
that's gross.
Yeah, it's just meat and cheese and bread.
And bread, yeah.
Or
just call it a dumb kid sandwich. That's
I know what I like.
That's right.
I like
meat,
what I know.
Meat, the cheese, and the bun.
Meat, the cheese, and the bun.
Never forget when Nick and I first started working together, we went on a client lunch to a fairly nice restaurant. And I don't know what I had. I think I got salmon or something, and the client got something. And he's like, "Can I get the hamburger? Just the meat, the cheese, and the bun." And I think I've heard that 1,000 times.
If you don't, I know it's a joke, but if you don't specify, they're going to bring it with ketchup or mustard or something.
That is true.
The
and that's
going to
ruin your whole sandwich.
There's no condiments on that?
No, no condiments.
How do you swallow it?
You know, you chew
that's,
it.
Yeah, that's like
Pepsi.
Right, Pepsi.
Wash it down
with a little soda. Yeah.
It's like a prison meal.
That's one of the big things in our house because my kids both get their burgers that way. And it's very hard. You have to be very clear when you go through a drive-thru at McDonald's in particular, because if you say, "I want a cheeseburger plain," they will bring, sometimes you'll get just the patty with cheese. Sometimes we've even gotten the bun with a slice of cheese and no patty.
Yep.
And so that's a good way to say it.
I've had it once where I've asked for a cheeseburger plain and I've received just two stacks of meat with no cheese and no bun.
You probably loved it.
No. You can't hold it. You use napkins or something?
I had
no.
such traumatic experiences as a child, and I've grown out of it, thankfully. But, you know, it doesn't really happen anymore now, but it used to be that birthday parties at McDonald's were a big thing. At least when I was a kid. I had a lot of friends who had birthday parties at McDonald's.
Yeah.
And everyone would get their Happy Meal.
Right.
And I hated mustard and pickles. And I'm not really a big fan of condiments anyway because they make the bun all soggy, which is disgusting. So I would like to be in control of my own condiments. But you can't get, back in 1980, you couldn't get a plain hamburger and a Happy Meal.
No.
They all were mass-produced and made 6 hours earlier, and they were sitting there with their pickles and mustard and ketchup, and that was the Happy Meal you got. And so one time I got up the nerve to go up to the counter, you know, to ask for, "Can you give me my hamburger plain, please?" And it takes an hour at the time to get a hamburger that plain back in McDonald's back in the day. And I missed the whole birthday party because I was just sitting up there waiting for my plain hamburger.
Almost the exact same thing happened to me once when I was a kid.
Yeah,
and that's one of the things that led me to Burger King and why I prefer Burger King, which is a whole other Joe thing with me. But Burger King's good. And back in the day, you could have it your way. That was the whole, the have it your way at Burger King, because you could order your sandwich plain.
Joe wants to make fun of us so badly right now. He just can't.
A room full of picky eaters. Just eat what they give you. Who cares?
Thanks, Mom.
Yes. Well, and thank you to Brian for stopping by and talking about his music that he and Pete do. Baby, I'm Not Your Blue Sky is a single that's just come out from him, and Getting Pretty Good at Getting Bad News, another single. So check it out at westernandmowry.com. You've been listening to episode number 11. Hopefully you heard this one. of the cold.
So.
You good? We good, Joe? You got everyone's so. Okay. Everyone sounds up. Episode number 11 of the Cold Oatmeal Podcast from all of us here at Rest Strategies at reststrategies.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you again next time.
Looking at you and it's love at first sight.